We are going to be looking at marketable permits and different types of marketable permit systems. First, we're going to do it in the non-spatial. One second. More. We'll do it in the non-spatial model, and then we will introduce the challenges associated with marketable permit systems when you introduce space. So that will be looking at chapter 14, section 1 only. So chapter 14 talks about a permit system under the conditions of space and then under the conditions of time. And we are not going to look at the issue of time. We're just going to talk about challenges around having space. Okay, so we have talked about command and control, CACs, which is the prescription approach to regulation, where the government sets standards, sets limits, sets quotas. We then talked about taxes and subsidies. Which were the first of the incentive-based policies, so that people would not be told how much to pollute, but rather be taxed for every unit they emitted, or were given a subsidy for every unit of emission they got rid of. We then looked at property rights. Okay. And liability. Okay, and this is our decentralized approach, where we put an onus on the individuals in society to use property rights and liability laws to sort out their incompatible use of resources. And the court system to enforce or allocate those rights. So there's no active role of government under property rights model. Okay. So the fourth type of program look at is one that is the market for permits. Okay. And they can take on many forms. So that's what we're going to start talking about tonight. We can have something that's referred to as TDP, which is a transferable discharge permit. We can have allowances, which is another form of referring to allotments of the right to pollute. It often shows up under the name cap and trade. Okay. As well as a offset system. Okay. So these are all the different terminologies used and variations on the market for permits that are used in the system. They all refer to exactly the same thing, a market-based solution for pollution. Okay. Now, building a permit system. So we're going to look at the components of a permit system. Okay. So the first thing we do is that the regulator sets an aggregate target. Okay, so this will be the total amount of emissions that they are going to allow within a country or a region or a period of time. It applies to everybody associated with that type of emissions. So it is the total target they have set. Then, once we set the total target, and we'll call that, say, big Q, then they set a permit system permits consistent with the target. Okay, so if we let little q equal the individual permit, then n will be the number of permits. Then little q will equal big Q divided by the n, the number of permits. Okay, so consistency is, for example, suppose that big Q was equal to 4 tons of emissions. Okay. And then n is, say, equal to 2, then little q would equal 2 permits. Well, this is not consistent because the number of units of permits are too few for trading. So if we were to set this type of system, we would want to have it such that n was fairly large and q was relatively small when compared to big Q. So if we had something consistent, right, where big Q is equal to 10,000, n is equal to 1,000, and then little q would be 10. So there we have a market that would have 1,000 units of permits that would be traded. Now, whether or not 1,000 is enough to make a permit market work will depend on the size of the market. If there's 100,000 firms, then 1,000 permits may be too small. If there's 100 firms, 1,000 permits may be the right size. Okay. Now, once we've got that decided, we need a distribution method. Okay. And that can be various ways. We can give them away. We can auction them off. But we have to get them out into the system. So both types are used frequently. Giving them away tends to be the most common. Okay, and then finally, we have to allow for trade. And that way the permits, firms are able to start passing the permits around. Okay, so the idea or the goal is to have a competitive permit market. Okay, so we've talked about all the features of a competitive market and how that appeals to society. So we are taking the concepts and the notion that a competitive market produces economic efficiency and saying if that's the case, why shouldn't it apply to emissions? Okay. So for simplicity, let's suppose that we will denote E as emissions and Q as permits. Further, let 1E equal 1Q. And that's just to keep it simple. So 1 unit of emissions requires 1 unit of Q or a permit. Okay. So how will this work? So let's look at our graph that we have become used to. So we have emissions. We have our marginal savings function. Okay. And we have the marginal savings. We have EU, our unregulated level of emissions. And if E is measuring in this direction emissions, then a firm buying permits will be buying them in this direction. So we'll put Q this way. Okay. So the government will issue this firm, and we'll use them, give them away, will issues Q0. Okay. So the firm has now received Q0 worth of permits. And if they want to pollute more than Q0, they would need to buy permits. If they do not need their permits, they can sell them. So the Q0 allows the firm to have E0 worth of emissions. So they have to reduce from EU to E0. Okay, so we go up, and at E0, call that A, right? We have the firm's marginal savings, MS0, which is the cost to eliminate an additional unit of emissions at that level. Okay. Now, let's suppose that the permit price initially is, oops, quite low. So there's a market price for permits, and they're at, we'll see, say, P. One. Well, at P1, the marginal savings, which is also the marginal abatement cost, is greater than the permit price. So if the firm can increase their emissions, the amount they save from one more unit of emissions is MS0. The cost to them of doing that would be P1. So they would buy permits So in this case, they would buy additional permits. And from EU to E1, it's cheaper to get rid of pollution or get rid of emissions than it is to buy permits, but at E1, they would equal the permit price. Now suppose that the permit price was higher. Say it was at P2. Well, at P2, the firm sees that the price of the permit is greater than the marginal savings, which is also the marginal abatement cost. They could sell a permit for P2, reduce their emissions for less than P2, and pocket the difference. So the firm would then choose to sell permits, and they would want to have a quantity of permits we'll call Q2, and they would be net sellers of the permits. Okay. So let's consider how this might work. We have, as an example, we have, say, two firms. And firm one has a marginal savings function equal to 16 minus E1. And firm two has a marginal savings function equal to 24 minus E2. Or sorry, minus 2E2. So for the first firm, E1U will be 16. And for firm 2, EU2 will be 12. So without regulation, these firms will pollute to where their marginal savings is zero, and that's 16 and 12. And that gives us total emissions of 28. Okay. Now, let's suppose that the government sets a goal of E total equal to 14. Okay. Now, they will then create Q total equal to 14. And this will equal Q1 plus Q2. And we'll call them bar, where QI bar equals the initial allocation. Okay. So firm one and firm two are going to be given a certain number of emissions. So what will they give? So Q1 bar, Q2 bar. So we go up and we see that one method would be to simply say everybody gets 7. That could be considered fair. Each firm gets half of the permits. On the other hand, firm ones and two could argue that they pollute differently, so they should be given a different allocation. So firm one may be given Q1 bar equal to 8, and firm two is given Q2 bar equal to 6. So they're each given 50% of what they were initially polluting. Okay. So, let's look at this graphically. We'll look at firm one. And then firm two. We have E1, E2. And first firm, we have the marginal savings function, 16 on the vertical and 16 on the horizontal intercepts, and that's our MS1. Firm 2, their intercept is 24. And their horizontal intercept is 12. Okay. So let's suppose that the government had given them each half of their pollution. So firm one is given 8. And their marginal savings would be 8. And firm two is given 6. So their marginal savings is equal to 12. So under the initial allocation of permits, Q1 bar and Q2 bar, we can see that they have different marginal savings or different marginal abatement costs. So this does not meet the equimarginal principle for efficiency. So we can see that if firm one was to reduce their emissions by one unit, it would go from 8 units of emissions to 7. So they go in this direction, then their marginal savings would rise to 9. And in return, firm 2 would get to increase their emissions. So they go from 6 to 7. And their marginal savings would be 10. So there is gains from trade for these two firms. So firm one, by getting to pollute one more unit, would save $12. Firm two, it would cost approximately $8 to get rid of one unit. So firm one would be happy to pay firm two for a permit. And firm two could sell it. So any price between 8 and 12 will make both firms better off. So how do we find our equilibrium? Well, we have two conditions. We know that since Q1 plus Q2 has to equal big Q, which is set at 14, then E1 plus E2 has to equal 14. We just need to find out what E1 and E2 are. Efficiency requires that the marginal savings of firm 1 equals the marginal savings of firm 2. So we put those two together and we get 16 minus E1 equals 24 minus 2 E2. So a little bit of algebra, and we get that 2E2 minus E1 equals 8. And so we have one equation, 2e1, 2e2 minus e1 equals 8. And we have a second equation that says that e2 plus e1 has to equal 14. And if I add the two equations, we get 3e2 equals 8 plus 14 is 22. And that's right. And E2 will equal 22 over 3, which is 7.3. Okay. So E2, E1 then, will simply be equal to 6.7. So we know that firm 1 wants to be at E1 equals 6.7, and their permits Q1 bar was set equal to 8. Okay, so firm 2, their goal is to have 7.3, and their permits Q2 bar were set equal to 6. So firm 1 will sell 1.3 units. 8 minus 6.7. And firm 2 will buy 1.3 units. Okay? And that means we go back to our graph. Then firm 1 is at 6.7. And firm 2 is at 7.3 up here. And the permit price will be 9.3, 9.3. And we'll call that alpha. And alpha prime. So in this case, firm 1, what happens with firm 1? Well, they are going to get permit revenue equal to this amount. So that's their revenue, right? 9.3 times 1.3. They then have to incur the costs of getting rid of those additional emissions, which is the yellow area. And that leaves them, hang on one second, with this green triangle, which will be their profit. Okay. Now, firm 2, they will have paid this box in revenue to get permits. So this will be the amount paid. So they will buy 1.3 permits. But that will allow them to save this entire area in abatement costs. So those are costs that they would have to pay if they're at 6, but don't have to pay if they're at 7.3. And by buying the permits, then this triangle represents the net savings for buying permits. Okay. Now, as we can see, then for firm one, they have to engage in just abatement costs to 6.7, but they get the green box or green triangle as profit. Firm two will have to abate from 12 to 7.3. So they will have this in their abatement costs. But at 6, they would have also included the yellow, so they only have to pay the blue purchase price. So firms quite like this model. So for the firms that are very good at abating, they can save, offset some of their abatement costs with profits from selling permits. Those firms that find it more expensive to abate, they can offset their abatement costs by reducing their total abatement through bought purchase of permits. So both firms are better off by this model. Okay. Now, as with the so with standards, the incentive to innovate was low. For taxes, the incentive to innovate was high. So what about the permit system? Okay, so let's take a look at whether or not the permit model gives firms an incentive to innovate. So let's go back to our trusty graph. Okay. And we stick in we'll have the initial marginal savings function. We'll call that MSO for the old or original, E, EU. We'll add the marginal damage function. And we'll assume that the government has initially set a socially efficient level of permits so that we're at E0, which is also equal to their permit Q0. Okay. Now, if we are in equilibrium, then this will also be the permit price P0. Now, if the firm does innovate, then what happens? So, initially, because of their new, the innovation shifts their marginal savings down to MS new, then again we ask the question, does the government adjust? Okay. So what will happen is that at the initial permit price, our firm will go from A to B. And they will go to E1, and their permits will be Q1, and they will sell. So initially, they get permit revenue that's going to be E0, AB, E1. And they have to engage in additional abatement. So they go from E0 to E1, and they incur the costs of abatement, which will be the area under the new marginal savings curve. So they have to incur this additional cost when they sell off their permits. And they have a profit, their initial profit will be A, B, C. Okay? So that will be the initial profit when they innovate. So they have an incentive to innovate. Suppose the government decides that they recognize that the firm has innovated and they need to adjust the permits. So now the government will have to enter the permit market because of the technological change, and change the permit quantity to get the permit price to go to P1. So now the firm sees the permit price has fallen, so they adjust to E2. But at the lower price, the firm then has an incentive to buy permits to save on abatement, and they go to the new equilibrium. So there is a positive incentive to innovate under the permit system. And the longer it takes for the permit price to come down, then the more the firm will be interested in innovation. So if I can innovate before anybody else innovates, I can benefit. And the longer that goes on, the more I benefit. Remember that emissions are a flow and permits are a flow. So typically, firms are reallocated permits each period, so they can continue to repeatedly resell any excess permits until the permit price starts to come down. Okay, so they do create an incentive to innovate. Okay, so both permits and taxes create incentives to innovate. Both require relatively low information by the regulator. And that is compared to command and control. So under the command and control or the standards, the government must have a great deal of information to go out and set individual standards. With a pollution tax, you set the tax and then you see how much emissions are reduced by each firm. And you don't need to know anything about the individual marginal savings functions. You just need to have an idea of what your aggregate target is. That is also true for permits. Okay. Now, permits also permits and taxes are efficient, meaning that the marginal savings of one will equal the marginal savings of two. So under the tax or the permit system, we will see that firms will reallocate their emissions until the marginal savings of each firm are equalized. So that gives us the efficient outcome. Okay. Now, differences. Okay, so unlike the tax, permits are sensitive to market structure. So the system, the permit system, relies on a healthy level of competition for permits. And be careful, that doesn't mean that the firm sells its product into a competitive market. It means that the firms that are creating the emissions are competitive. That means you have to have many polluters, and no one polluter is so large that they can corner the market or strategically influence the price. Okay. And if permits are auctioned, then we have the same total private cost as the tax. Okay? So when we look at our picture, emissions, and we add in our marginal savings schedule, then, if the government is using a tax, then they set a tax rate equal to T, then the firm will have emissions at E0. Call that point A, EU, 0. So, under the tax, the private cost will be the total abatement cost, which is EU A E0, and the tax bill, which will be E0 A T 0. Or it will be this entire area will be the total cost. So the firm will pay a total of EU 2A 2T 20, right? Now, if permits are auctioned, then the permit price will equal the tax, and the firm will have to buy each period T or E0 worth of permits at a price of T. So P, the permit price, will equal the tax rate. If, however, the government hands out permits, and either if they give out Q0, then the firm will then be able to buy permits at P0. So their total abatement cost and price of permits means their total cost would be from EU to A and down, and we'll call that B. So if permits are given away, and it's Q0, then total cost will simply be EU to A to B to Q0. So that's even if they have to buy some permits. If their permits that they're given are, say, Q1, then the firm will pay and have to, they will sell off some of their permits, which means they will have the same abatement cost, but they will also have a profit equal to the triangle up here. Okay. So in general, if permits are sold at auction each period, it's exactly like a tax. If they're given away based on some historical count, then they would be beneficial to the firms, and firms would prefer a market system over a permit tax. Okay. Now, another advantage of the permits versus the tax has to deal with economic growth. Okay. So let's suppose that we're looking at aggregate emissions. Oops. And so we have E for aggregate emissions. And the aggregate marginal savings will denote as marginal savings A. Okay, and we'll put that out here. Smaller. Okay, so the government comes along and they set their permit quota And we'll say it's right about here. Okay. So this is big Q. So all firms buy permits that add up to big Q. And the permits would then sell at a price we'll call P0. And I'll call this big Q0. Or the government could set a tax, T0, equal to P0. And the tax and the permits would produce the exact same equilibrium, point A. T0, same outcome as Q0. Okay. Now, the aggregate marginal savings came from adding up the number, each firm's marginal savings. So if the total number of firms starts to rise through economic growth, then we get a shift in the aggregate marginal savings. So the marginal savings function shifts out this way. So marginal savings aggregate prime. Now this is where the tax and the quotas start to differ. Under the tax at T0, all the firms will, there's more firms, each set their marginal savings equal to the original tax rate, and their emissions will go out to E1. Under the permit system, permits in aggregate are set at Q0. So the growth in the number of firms will lead to a rise in the price of permits to P1 or point C. So automatically the permit price adjusts for the additional demand for permits, and it keeps the emissions at the same level as before. Under the tax, if you want to keep emissions at the same level, you have to change the tax directly. Okay? So there is a benefit to having the permit system in terms of it requires less direct government intervention, because under the tax, the government would have to come in and change the tax rate each time the marginal savings function shifted. Okay. So that covers the basics of how a permit system works when we don't take spatial issues into account. Okay. So now let's start talking a bit about the spatial issue. Okay. So we have two firms. We have firm one, and we have firm two. Okay. And firm one produces E1, and firm two produces E2. Okay. Now for firm one, as we move further and further away, the concentration of the environmental damage is going to change. So clearly, depending where you are, the emissions will be quite toxic, but if you're further away, the emissions will be less toxic, depending on the nature of the emissions. Also, it won't be uniform. So notice that if I'm here at point A, I'm outside the third ring because the rings are close together. If I'm at B, which is about the same distance, I'm inside two of the rings. So each ring represents a level of environmental damage. Further out we are, the lower is the environmental damage. We then introduce a second firm, and they too have regions where it's most toxic in the first ring. As you move further away, it is the less toxic region, and then even further away. So now we have different rings for each firm, and we even have an area where they overlap. So if I am at point D, I'm inside the third ring of the blue firm, but I'm completely outside of all the rings of the second firm. Firm C, or person C, just a slight distance away, is affected by both firm 1 and firm 2. And then we could have person E. They're only affected by firm 2, but they're not affected by firm 1. Okay. So this is some of the challenges that are faced with introducing spatial issues. Okay. So the way we address this is we will have, say, two sources of pollution, firm 1, firm 2, and we have what are called receptors, P1 and P2. And receptors measure things like air quality. Okay. So, firm 1 and firm 2 have emissions E1, E2. So we have firm 1, we have firm 2, and the government comes along and sets up a receptor, P1, to measure air quality. And so from firm 1, we have E1, and it puts out emissions that affect the air quality that are measured by receptor 1. Firm 2 produces its emissions E2, which are also picked up by receptor 1. Okay. The government sets up a second receptor, we'll call P2, which measures air quality in its region, and the same emissions E1 that came from firm 1 also are registered at receptor 2. Similarly, E2 produces emissions that are read by receptor 2. Okay, now P1 and P2 are measuring air quality, or they're measuring pollution. E1 and E2 are actually emissions. So we have E goes through, call A, which leads to P. A represents our emissions. P represents the actual pollution, the reduction in air quality. And A is what's called a transfer coefficient. Okay. So, if E is equal to 5 and the readings at the pollution index is 10, then A is 2. So 1 unit of emissions causes 2 units of air quality or pollution. And each firm will have, depending on the environment, the lay of the land, the wind, will affect what these transfer coefficients are. So A11 represent firm 1's transfer to P1. A12 represents firm 1's transfer to P2. A21 will represent the emission transfer from firm 2 to receptor 1. And A22 represents the receptor readings from firm 2 at P2. So let's suppose that A11 and A21 both equal 1. So we measure them equals 1. So if E1 is equal to 10 and E2 is equal to 10, then our reading at P1 is 20. 10E1 times 1 plus 10E2 times 1 is 20. Now suppose that A12 is equal to 0.5. That means that firm 1's emissions does very little damage at receptor 2 compared to receptor 1. So 10 units of emissions from firm 1 will lead to 5 units of damage measured at P2. But let's also suppose that A22 is equal to 1.5. So 10 units of emissions from firm 2 does 15 units of pollution at receptor 2. So we would get from here 5 plus 15, 20. So in this current structure, each firm is releasing 10 units of emissions. And at each of the zones or the regions where they are measuring environmental damage, the pollution index is exactly the same. It's 20. Now, let's suppose that firm 1 made a deal with firm 2 so that firm 1 went to 9. So they agreed to reduce their emissions by 1. And in return, firm 2, they get to increase their emissions by 1 to 11. Okay? So, what happens at receptor 1? Well, we get 9 from firm 1 plus 11 from firm 2, we get 20. Nothing changes. But what happens at receptor number 2? Well, now we have 9 times 0.5 plus 11 times 1.5. Okay. So, firm 1, when they reduce their pollution emissions by 1, then the readings fell by 0.5, but firm 2 added 1 emissions, so we increased from them by 1.5. So the net change would be 21, would be the new emissions. So what has happened is that when firms 1 and 2 make a 1-for-1 trade, the receptor at number 1 says, that's fine, total emissions or total pollution readings stayed exactly the same, we're okay. Receptor 2 says, wait a second, when they made that trade, the pollution reading went from 20 to 21. So now we see that introducing these zones creates an interesting new dynamic where trading between two firms, whether or not it's okay, depends on which zone we're looking at and what kind of rules. So how do we deal with this problem where we want to have a rule that says that we have a goal of P star everywhere, and we want P1 less than or equal to P star, and P2 less than or equal to P star. So that becomes the new challenge in addressing a permit system when we introduce space, okay? So we are going to introduce spatial issues next class, okay?